Good morning. Lance Tarchione, technical agronomist with DeKalvin Asgro, here with you on WJIL Radio this morning with our weekly episode of Ag Talk. Been a busy week at my place. I don't know about you, but a lot going on the farm, a lot going on with work, a lot going on the basketball court, wrapping up the regular season with the girls had a good home game win on Thursday night against Havana, which is a team they enjoy winning against, but don't get to do it too often. They usually seem to play us pretty tough and get the better of us most of the time. But we had a really good night shooting, and they had a poor night shooting, and that was enough to give us a good win. So been an unseasonably warm week. Actually set some records locally on Thursday for new record highs, and anytime we're setting weather records, it makes me want to look back and see, you know, what the old records are. So I looked up Peoria, which they started keeping weather records in Peoria in 1883. So several hundred thousand years before 1883, we can only guess what the weather was. But since 1883, we know pretty accurately what the weather was. And so while we were, you know, in the low 60s, which was good enough in some areas to break the record high for February 8th, nowhere near high enough to break the February record, which has been set on two different dates. So February 10th, 1932, and February 20th, 2017, which, not, you know, only 6 years ago. I don't really remember it being this warm in February, but on those two dates, it was 74 for a high in Peoria. If you're curious, the January record high set January 23rd, 1909 at 71. That's pretty impressive for January. And then looking ahead to March, the March record was also from the early 1900s. Must have been a warm stretch there before, even before global warming. Go figure. March 21st, 1907, we hit 87 degrees in Peoria. And if you're curious, the flip side of that, the record lows, are all going back a ways. So January 5th, 1884, so just a year after they started keeping track of weather, was the coldest ever recorded temperature in Peoria at negative 27. No wind chill included in that, just the temperature. Then February 13th, 1905, we were negative 26. That would be the coldest February temperature ever in Peoria. Cold Valentine's Day that year. And then March 8th, 1943 was negative 11 for the coldest ever March temperature in Peoria. So if you're a weather geek like I am, maybe you enjoy that. Started calving season officially this week as well at home. We've got two on the ground, but both of them came with some challenges, but they are alive and mothers are well, so we're off to a bit of a shaky start, but 2-0 on the calving season as far as two live and zero dead. So hopefully we can continue that trend. Had a cool event for work this week. We have a yield contest every year for customers that are planting Asgro soybeans and DeKalb corn, and we call it Yield Chasers. And we have a banquet every year to recognize the winners of that. Just have a little fun, give away some prizes, have a good meal, have some speakers that come in and give some presentations, and had about 200. Dealers and customers gathered outside of Springfield this week for our Yield Chaser banquet, and we recognize 12 contestants for, so we have kind of a northern division and a southern division, and then we have corn and soybeans in each division, and we give awards and prizes for the top three yields. So in total, that's 12 people we recognize. And all six of the corn winners were over 300 bushel this year. So that's pretty cool. And four of the six soybean winners were over 100. So pretty impressive yields. We also kind of recognize the participants in the National Corn Growers Yield Contest, which is a far more official contest than ours. Ours is kind of more for fun. The NCGA contest is that's kind of like the big leagues of yield contests. And our DeKalb products had a very, very strong year in NCGA, and there's 27 national winners, so there's nine different categories. So like if you've got irrigated ground versus not irrigated, or no-till versus not no-till, all the different categories that they have. So there's nine different categories, and they recognize there's three national winners in each category. And then every state that participates in the contest, most of them do, have the same categories at the state level, and then recognize three winners within the state. So you have both national and state winners. And two-thirds of the national winners, or 18 out of 27, were using some of my seed products. Two-thirds of the national first-place winners, so there'd be nine national first-place winners, so six out of nine of those were DeKalb hybrids this year. We had 246 state winners using our products, and 74 uniquely different products were had wins in the contest this year for DeKalb. And they're a little closer to home here in Illinois. We actually set a new state. There were several new records set this year, set a new state record yield in the NCGA yield contest. A grower in East Central Illinois that I know, Troy Uphoff is his name, set a new yield record with one of our hybrids at 362 bushels per acre here in Illinois. That'd be in the non-irrigated category. So not everybody believes in yield contests. I mean, they're kind of artificial. Not everyone has the same opportunity to win. Not everybody is really wired the way you got to be wired to win a yield contest. You got to be willing to, pull out all the stops, and the people that enter the contest, they're not achieving these yields across their entire farming operation. And so some farmers kind of scoff at them, think they're kind of fake, kind of artificial, which to a certain extent they are, but it's still pretty cool to, even though it's only an acre and a quarter, to achieve a yield of 362 bushel in corn. So I think it's neat. I think it's fun. I don't have the patience to do it on my own farm myself, because it takes a tremendous amount of time and a very high level of skill and a high level of management and a high level of attention to detail to compete for a win in these contests. I mean, it's kind of like playing football in high school versus playing football in college versus playing football in the NFL. The further you go, the stiffer the competition gets. So when I come back from the break, I'm going to talk about a little project we got going on here on the farm, and be back with you shortly. Hi, Lance Starchione back with you here on WGL Radio this morning. And before the break, I mentioned I was going to talk about a little project we got going here on the farm. So I started tearing out some fence last week on a new farm that we were able to rent. And the landlord and I decided he's got a couple fences along the road that no longer serve a purpose. As a livestock farmer, I actually appreciate good fences. The old saying, good fences make good neighbors, or the less friendly version of that might be, bad neighbors often have bad fences. I like to have good fences. Good fences means that you know, you spend time and money and effort and work building a fence, but it's nice to have fences that are good enough that you're not chasing cows on a frequent basis and fixing fences where cows get through your fences. So, but on farms like this one that will never see livestock, fences really serve no purpose. And over time, they get overgrown with brush and get to be an eyesore, and it make it harder to mow and maintain field edges, and they just get grown up with brush and stuff. So old fence rows are always full of mulberries, locusts, maples, honeysuckle, briars, just all sorts of brushy-type trees and stuff that come up naturally where the birds poop and spread seeds around, and next thing you know, you got trees growing there. They're also good for growing poison ivy. The vines cover posts and use fence wire like a trellis. And I've always been blessed to not suffer from traditional allergies. I'm not really allergic to any medicines. I don't have my mom has really bad hay fever. I'm not allergic. My brother was allergic to grass pollen and all kinds of different pollen. I don't really struggle with those kind of allergies, but I am extremely sensitive to poison ivy. And even in the winter when there are no leaves, if you've ever heard the saying "leaves of three, let it be," that's something you teach kids when they're young to stay away from poison ivy. The sap and the juice and the vines can still get me pretty good. And about every time I fix fence or tear out fence, you know, when you're building a new fence, there's nothing there. But any fence that's been there any amount of time, it's going to have some poison ivy growing in it somewhere. And no matter what I'm doing, I'll find it. And so I can use a count on being miserable for a couple weeks after I've been working on fence. Such is the case now. So through this week, I've been kind of looking goofy with lotion and stuff all over my face where it's broken out with poison ivy. And my son's idea was to just bulldoze out the fence with the brush. So, you know, we left the trees and brush standing and just took down the wire and pulled the post. And we could have just wiped the whole thing out with a bulldozer and pushed it up in a big old pile. But then you end up with a pile of brush that's full of wire, and you've got broken off posts in the ground, and you got metal laying places that I don't want metal. And, you know, I'm kind of particular about certain things. And I just wanted to take the wire down, take the posts out. We rolled up all the wire and loaded it up on a trailer and took it to the scrapyard. And the good news is the whopping $159 I got for the scrap that we sold will be enough to cover my medical bills. So there's that. Hope you're all having a great week, and we'll be back with you next weekend.